This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I believe it is episode 590. 10 more. We're going to cross 600. Well, no. Yes, 10 more, and we're going to cross 600. And what, 12 years is going to be 624, something like that, I think. So we're getting close. We're getting close to crossing 600. Couple of months. So all is well. All is well. Good week at work. We were able to get the next project into beta. So that's good. And was able to do some updates, get some updates straightened around for some things, and got some progress done. Good week at work. Let's see. Writing is going fine. I'm on chapter 21, I think. Almost finished with chapter 21. Normally they go about 30 chapters and then epilogue, so 31, 32-ish chapters. So I seem to be right on target with that. And I think I know where the arc is. So I think I see my way clear to end at this point. I just have to get it written out. So that's always good. I think I know what's happening for the epilogue. That's always good. I'm pretty sure. You know, you got to get it on the page, but I think this is going to work. And it will help establish one of my lead characters and get him out of the mode where he's been bewildered a lot into a mode where he is in more control. So that's good. So that's a good path. Let's see. Paper bag day went well. People seem to enjoy it. It was a big costume. I kind of had to push my way through doorways and be real careful. Oh, I had a small tragedy Friday morning as I was leaving the house. I was carrying it out it was Thursday when I was loading everything up. I was carrying it out and I didn't judge the distance correctly. And I actually cleaned an oil lamp off a shelf. Thankfully, it was just the chimney, the glass chimney. So I grabbed a broom and got that all swept up. And my wife had said, she said, that's just an old oil lamp that I've had just for when we've had power outages. So I'll probably get that replaced at some point, get that taken care of. But that was really the only tragedy. I did have to take my wife's car, her van, because there were big pieces. The headpiece was made from a 24-inch Japanese lantern, Chinese paper lantern. Plus, it had paper bags, lunch bags, sandwich bags, lunch bags. My wife tells me that sandwich bags are the plastic ones, lunch bags are the paper ones, so we'll go with that. That I had cut, so it was probably another 4 or 5 inches on each side, so it was closing in on 30 inches wide, which through some doorways, that's a little bit of a push, but we got there. It was fun. People seemed to enjoy it. Had pictures and laughter, and I said on my little videos, one of the funniest things that happened was I sort of looked like a tree, because I had this big round thing on my head, and then it was kind of a tutu, and then I had paper bags on my arms and legs, and so you really, if you just glanced at it, you wouldn't necessarily see there was a person there. And I was standing in front of my shopping cart, and I was looking through and seeing what else I needed to buy, and this lady kind of walked by, a little older lady, and she kind of glanced my direction, which that's my cue to say hello. And I said, "Happy Paper Bag Day," and she jumped and kind of shrieked a little bit, and then she said, I thought you were just like a proper, like a step. I didn't know there was a person in there. I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." So we chatted, we laughed about that for a little bit, but it was fun. It was fun. Being scared for a moment is not bad if there's laughter at the end of it. That's one of my little rules. So family as well. We seem to be staying ahead of any infections, which is good. because I'm trying to do my best there. Springfield has now put into place a masked ordinance, so it's a $100 fine if you are in a building or near people that are not your immediate, where you're not wearing a mask. So people are getting used to it. I grew up in Asia, so this isn't that big of a deal to me. But some people seem to be struggling. But, you know, we'll get there. We'll get there. And it does work. As I've mentioned before, we had a situation here in town with a hair salon. And apparently the story, the write-up of the incident, has been published by the CDC now as a way to say, see, masks really do work. There were two individuals at the hair salon. They had both had COVID. They were experiencing symptoms. One of the ladies, her doctor had told her it was just allergies. She, you know, wanted to get a test, and he said, you don't need a test, it's just allergies, if I have the story correctly. So both of them were symptomatic, and they served 139 customers during that time. Zero infections. Because the customers were masked, and they were masked. So masks do work. And, you know, if we'd all get masked up and we'd all just be careful, we could push the infection rates down on this thing and potentially push them all the way down to kill this thing out. But, you know, everybody gets to make their own decisions, so that's fine. And speaking of making our own decisions, there was something that came out of Paper Bag Day that tweaked my interest, and it was not hard at all to collect information about this particular topic. And in fact, especially because of the time we're in right now, information just pours out of this subject. And the subject very simply is the stories that we tell ourselves. I know I did a thing several weeks ago on our brain tells us stories, but there is a certain responsibility that we have for the stories that we tell ourselves. And that inner dialogue, that inner story, will set the tone of your entire life. And because of that, I think it is crucially important that we pay attention to that inner story and we evaluate it based on what Paul tells us is the difference between flesh and spirit. Paul goes through in Galatians 5, starting at verse 16, and he goes through an explanation of flesh and spirit. And he talks about the fact that the flesh wars against the spirit and the spirit wars against the flesh. And then he says, and the works of the flesh are these, and he just lists them out. And then he says, but the fruit of the spirit are these, and he lists those out. And I think we need to be very attentive to the stories that we are telling ourselves and to always lay those stories against that evaluation that Paul gives us. Because if the story that you're telling yourself gins up the kinds of feelings, envy, dissonance, strife, anger, if the stories you're telling yourself gins up those things that are the works of the flesh, that story is coming from your flesh. Period. And we all battle this. The stories that we tell ourselves should be ginning up within us love, patience, kindness, long-suffering, mercy, gentleness, all the things that are the fruit of the Spirit. And if the stories we're telling ourselves inside do that, that's Spirit, and that will be profitable for us. That's profitable. Because it will change the tone of your life. And in changing the tone of your life, it will not only help you to relate to life better, but it will quiet your life. And in the process then of quieting your life, you'll be able to hear His whispers. And that's where success lies. Hearing His whispers, because we have no idea what's ahead of us. But if we hear His whispers, He can help guide us. He can help show us the path. So anyways, the stories we tell ourselves. I am already home. But here we go. I will try to just work through this. Let me get my mail and then we'll talk about this. What started all of this was the fact that I had talked about Margaret E. Knight last week, because that's the person who invented the flat bottom paper bag, the shopping bag, Margaret E. Knight. In 1870, she was a female inventor, brilliant woman. When she died, according to Time magazine, she was working on her 89th invention. She was 90 years old. She was working 20 hours a day. Really prolific. Just made a tremendous mark. And one of the things she did was, she invented paper bags. And invented the machine that made paper bags as well. I mean, she's just tremendous. Lived a tremendous life. Time magazine quoted her, and I have to be careful with this, but this is what kind of triggered the whole thing for me. Time magazine quoted her, was really the only quote in the entire article from her. And the quote that they had from her was, let me go ahead and pull my notes out now that I'm in the garage. Towards the end of her life, Time magazine said, Knight once lamented. Now, this might mean she only said this once, and this really wasn't how she felt about things. But, you know, Time magazine pulled this out as something that would be indicative of something she would say, which maybe this is a bad characterization, but this is what triggered this podcast. Toward the end of her life, Knight once lamented, quote, I'm only sorry I couldn't have had as good a chance as a boy and have been put to my trade regularly. That's an inner story. I don't care whether you make lots and lots of money or not. 89 inventions is a spectacular life. That's a spectacular life. And that, you know, I don't know many boys who would have that legacy to leave. But the story there is, oh, everything would have been better if only I had been a boy. You know, it's interesting. Taylor Swift put out a song called The Man. And the theme of the song is, if I was a man, this is how much better my life would be. That's really... So there was an article that asked, so what does she think would change? Quote, this is from the song. They'd say I hustled, put in the work, she sings with indignance. But in a September 2017 article for Forbes, Joe Harpaz wrote Swift deserved to be, quote, on the list of modern-day disruptive business geniuses. So they're already saying that you hustled, but you don't see it. Second thing, lyrics. What I was wearing if I was rude could be all separated from my good ideas and power moves. Except in an article last month from Vogue, when this article was written, Michelle Ruiz applauded Swift's decision to defy Big Machine Records and re-record her old songs, calling it, quote, the ultimate power move. Swift also says in the song, quote, I'd be a fearless leader, unquote. And yet in 2015, Swift ended up number 6 on Fortune's list of the world's greatest leaders. The article says her case for gender-based Oppression, though fun to listen to, is weak. But even if she were right that people in general perceive her negatively because she's a woman, I still find myself lost as to the utility of this focus. What is to be gained from positioning oneself as a victim and dwelling in the muck of one's outrageous fortune? It is precisely what Christina Hoff Summers, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and registered Democrat, has labeled a brand of advocacy she calls fainting couch feminism. In an interview with the Dartmouth Review, she said, quote, "Our feminist foremothers viewed women as just as competent and mentally as strong as men, so they fought and won a battle for equality. Trigger warnings, safe spaces, identity theatrics betray that tradition and treat women like they are fragile little birds in need of protection. I see too many talented, idealistic young women turning inward away from a world that needs them." So this is inner story. What is the inner story? Because it doesn't matter what your circumstances are. That inner story is going to set the tone of your life. And it's really important to guard that. There was an article that came out this week that I saw it and I started reading it and I just went, wow. And frankly, I didn't finish it. And then I saw another commentator reading it. And so I watched her read the article for the first time and live commentate on the article. And at one point, I got into this article, and I thought, this has got to be a joke. This really, really has to be a joke. It has to be. This is one of those, like, Babylon Bee satire things where the guy's going to come out later and say, I fooled you. I got that guy to publish that, but I didn't mean that at all. But I looked up the name, the man who wrote this article. And in fact, he had written another article that didn't sound like a joke that really had aspects of fainting couch in it just as much. So, you know, he starts off the article talking about all the things that are examples of the everyday racism that bombards people of color from the supermarket to the playing field. You know, and so they're all iconic American products that both corporations and consumers finally agree are ready for a rebrand. But what about the far more subtle streams of everyday racism that course through our homes and our workplaces and the outside world? These instances may be far. Oh, sorry, I flipped the page. Far from less pervasive and no less deserving of cultural reckoning. He said, for me, this reckoning begins with traffic signals. Okay, So he's standing at a traffic signal with a friend who is white and a female. And he said something I'd never give a second thought of until we reached the crosswalk. So this woman tells her daughter, remember, honey, as we waited for the light to turn green, we need to wait for the little white man to appear before we can cross the street. Okay, and this guy, he just goes off the deep end. I realize that white people like to exert control over nearly everything everyone does, I thought. But since when this literally include trying to cross the street? Okay, and okay, so here we go. So he says, you know, it's a function of age, that he remembers when there's words, when it's walk and don't walk. Okay, just stop and think for a moment. Why would we replace the words walk and don't walk with symbology? This is not hard. And as the person I heard who was commentating on this article, they were saying, and who's to say it's a man? Why can't that figure be a woman? Okay, so anyways, this bothered this guy so much that he began to dig deep into my 40-something consciousness to try to remember if I was raised asking a little white guy to let me cross the street. Okay, so he digs around, he goes back in. He finally ends up. He Googles stuff. He's searching. He finally ends up the Federal Highway Administration. He said, this is where things got interesting because it turns out that the little white man who raised my ire isn't exactly white and he isn't even really a man. Oh, okay. So a hominoid is how the folks at the Federal Highway Administration initially described him, though later they referred to him as a gender-neutral walking person, an icon that actually dates back to the 1940s. At the time, walk, don't walk, typified traffic signage, and guess what, began to be phased out because words could be misunderstood by increasingly globalized populations. Quote, this is from the spokesperson for the Federal Highway Administration, the use of icons instead of words on traffic signals has been a slow but steady evolution for decades because they improve universal comprehension. This is not a recent development. Okay. In fact, the walking person's first major move actually took place in 1971, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it was slowly replaced until 2009, when the walking person finally became the Federal Highway Administration's standard. As the spokesperson said, the option to use words is no longer permitted in newly installed signals. Okay, so one day soon, every traffic signal will contain the walking person along with its counterpart, the bright red hand, telling folks not to walk. Okay, all right. So the little man is actually a little person, but that little person is still white, right? Well, not quite. It's lunar white. According to the Federal Highway Administration, a shade of white with yellow and gray accents that mimics the color of the moon. Lunar white wasn't chosen because it sounds cool. According to the Federal Highway Research, the agency person says that moonlight offers the peak sensitivity for the rod cells in the human retina. In other words, this is the author writing the article. In other words, our vision is predisposed to favoring the clarity and intensity of moonlight. So it's not a man, it's a person. It's not white, it's the color of the moon. Okay, so he goes on to admit, and this is where I thought it was satire. When it turned at this point, I was like, okay, this is really a satire, but I don't think it is. In the end, it's not that the walking white man is so super duper bright. Rather, his true competitive edge is that he's super duper bright. The use of bright colors offers the greatest contrast against a dark background. They do not lend themselves to confusions with other colors and are thought to provide the greatest level of comprehension and safety. And then he says, and there you have it, the government-sponsored origins of the little white men telling us to cross the streets of New York, thanks to help from the Federal Highway Administration. I am now convinced that technology and necessity, rather than some anti-black conspiracy, propelled the shift from the verbal crosswalk cues to a lunar white walking person. Okay, so that should be the end of the article. Done. End of article. It's not the end of article. But then he goes on to say, but my heart still sinks at the specter of teaching my sons to ask a white man for permission to do, well, anything, because so much of the world already insists that we do. Okay, see, this is an internal dialogue. And it's an internal dialogue that is genning up within him strife and anger and envy and dissonance. This is Flash. At a time when the totems of systemic anti-blackness are being dismantled at a surprising pace, there comes a moment when you have to consider the end game. And traffic lights are one of those moments. Because while this is highly politicized period does demand a racial rethink, overhauling the stoplight industrial complex is probably not the best use of our resources. Really. A white man isn't really telling us when to cross the street, even if we hear a friend blithely expressing it in those terms. Nonetheless, that little white man woke me up to the ways in which language imparts power and privilege even upon the most banal necessities. And so as I begin teaching my boys basic survival skills like riding a bike, waiting in line, and yes, crossing the street, I'll work hard to avoid phrases like little white man. Obviously, quote, bright light person rolls off the tongue with far less mellifluously. But a bit of extra verbal labor is worth the price of not conceding our power even to one more little white man. Oh, boy. Oh. Everybody gets to make their own choices in life. Everyone gets to make their own choices in life. And everyone gets to choose their own stories that they tell themselves. But those stories do influence us. Those stories do impact us. As I was driving from work to church today, I was listening to one of the commentaries that I normally listen to. And they mentioned this, and I thought, what? Because the museum, the National Museum for Black American History or something, I don't know. It is a national museum, has put out a poster now about whiteness and the things that if you believe in these things, these are the whiteness things and this is the inherent racist. And they also put out a PDF to try to clarify. The name of the PDF is Some Aspects and Assumptions of White Culture in the United States. It's subtitled, While Different Individuals Might Not Practice or Accept All These Traits, They Are Common Characteristics of Most U.S. White People Most of the Time. In other words, if you ascribe to these traits, you're part of the whiteness problem. Okay? You're part of the whiteness. And your belief that all people should adopt these things is part of the whiteness. And you need to address this in yourself as part of an anti-racism campaign. Okay, so you're thinking about, you know, calling people names, not treating people fairly. No. Okay, some of this stuff, you know, I mean, is... Some of this stuff people need to, you know, take care of. But there's a whole bunch of it. And I won't read all of it. You can look it up and find it yourself. But let's just read down through some of this. Rugged individualism. This is part of the whiteness that you need to combat against anti-racism. Under rugged individualism is self-reliance. Individual is the primary unit. Independence and autonomy are highly valued and rewarded. Individuals are assumed to be in control of their environment. Okay, there's a section on competition about how people are competing, and some of that is too much. People do compete too much. Okay, justice. Well, it's whiteness if you believe that justice is based on English common law and that should protect property and entitlements. And if intent counts, that's whiteness. In other words, if what you intended to do, if what you said was misinterpreted, it's whiteness for you to think that your intentions count. All that counts is the effect it had on the other person, according to the story that they tell themselves. Okay, there's a whole section on communication, a section on history, there's a section on holidays. The Protestant work ethic. Okay, this is more whiteness. That hard work is the key to success. That you should work before you play. That if you didn't meet your goals, you didn't work hard enough. The emphasis on the scientific method. I'm literally reading this. I'm not making this up. The emphasis on the scientific method. That objective, rational, linear thinking. That's whiteness. Cause and effect relationships. Quantitative emphasis. Okay, time, adherence to rigid time schedules, time viewed as a quantity, future orientation, planning for the future, delaying gratification, progress is always best, thinking that tomorrow will be better, family structure, the nuclear family, If you think that the best family structure is a father and a mother and whatever, 2.3 kids, if you think that's ideal, that's whiteness. And whiteness is enforcing this racist view of everything. Okay? The children should have their own rooms and be independent. So they go on to aesthetics and that Christianity, religion is the norm. You know, that anything other than the Judeo-Christian tradition is foreign. Okay, and see, that's sad. I mean, we should be known by our love. So there are some things on here that when you read, like, the competition and that kind of stuff, I say, yeah, people just need to back off of that. But what this does, because critical theory, which birthed anti-racism, which birthed white fragility, because critical theory is all about competitions of power structures, the individual is erased in that. And you can see that here. And that also means that since everything is a power structure, there's not one power structure that's any better than another. So in other words, science is just another power structure. Science, the scientific method, investigation, clear linear thinking, that's all just a power structure. And when you tell people, you know, well, here's the facts, well, what you're doing is you're overriding their feelings, and their feelings are just as important as your facts because they have an inner story that they're telling themselves that they know is true inside. And that story is going to set the tone of their entire life. And this is where I come back again to there is, well, of course, all of that is subjective, but there is objective reality. And Paul laid it out in Galatians 5, starting at verse 16. That each of us, every single one of us, doesn't matter whether we hail from Africa or from Europe or from Asia or from Australia, doesn't matter whether we live in any of those countries or live in South America or hail from South America or Central America, every single one of us has a reality within us. And that reality is that we are at war with ourselves. And it's up to us to decide who's going to win that battle. And if you take a look at Galatians 5, starting at verse 16, you'll see there's a very clear delineation between the works of the flesh and the fruit of the Spirit. And I would just encourage you that if when you read down the works of the flesh, if you see those things in your life, Don't make excuses for them. Start talking to Jesus. Ask him to help you get loose of those things. And for the people, I'll give you one practical tip and then I gotta go because it's time for me to get something to eat. One practical tip, blessing. Okay, if you feel yourself looking at a certain person or a certain group of people, if you have been through this whole thing and have adopted some of these things, and now every single white person you see, there's just inside you when you see that white person, I would heartily encourage you to embrace blessing. When you see a white person or when you see someone who makes you uncomfortable, if possible, out loud, begin to bless them. I just bless this individual, Father. I don't know what their situation is, but whatever struggles they're going through in life, I just ask that you'll help them, that you'll prosper them, help them to be a good parent, help them to be a good spouse, help them to do well at their job, help them to have wisdom and creativity in everything they put together. Just be with them. Draw them closer to you every single day. Just bless them. And bless them, and bless them, and it's amazing. Jesus said, bless those that curse you for a reason, because in that blessing, those stories of envy and strife and dissension and destruction within you will start fading away. It's an amazing thing. And you'll be able to get back to love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, gentleness, perseverance. All the good things in life come from this fruit of the Spirit. And we need to embrace them every moment of every day. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.